Okay, you're very welcome back to Kilkit with Eugene Doyle here until 6 p.m. Now, I've been trying to get, I've got David Moore on the line, and I'm trying to get the second person on the line that I need to bring, and I'm going to try him here while I'm on air here, just give me a second here now, and we'll try it here. Okay, we can't get him. So, okay, no, okay, not to worry. Now, okay, welcome back to our to Kilkenny Day and our Monday astronomy slot. With the ISS no longer gracing our evening skies, you might wonder what's left to see, but fear not, there's plenty to enjoy. But to start us off, the big news this evening is that a world breakthrough has been made by researchers in Tel Aviv University, where scientists see a star survive encounter with a black hole, not once, but twice. And as usual, I'm joined by David Moore, who is editor of Astronomy Ireland magazine. Now, I was supposed to be also joined by Dr. Phil Wiseman, a senior research fellow at the University of Physics and Astronomy at the University of Southampton, but I can't reach him at the moment. So, David, good afternoon, good evening to you.
Good evening.
Now, David, I just read this fascinating article about how scientists observed a star surviving not one, but two close encounters with a supermassive black hole, a discovery that challenges long-held assumptions in astrophysics. The research, led by Tel Aviv University, suggests that some stars may only be partially disrupted by black holes rather than fully destroyed, opening up new questions about these cosmic phenomena. Now, the discovery suggests that some stars can survive partial disruption by a black hole, contrary to previous beliefs. How might this finding reshape our understanding of tidal disruption events like TDEs and the behaviour of matter near black holes?
Well, a lot of what goes on in black hole research, you know, happens a great distance away. This particular galaxy is 400 million light years away. So the light that we're seeing left the black hole long before the first dinosaurs even existed. So life on Earth was very simple back then, barely. I don't think there's any animal life. It's just beginning. So people think, you know, this is all very easy. But in fact, you're pushing the limits of science. And a lot of what goes on are computer simulations of applying the laws of nature to what we think goes on in really extreme places where black holes are ripping entire stars apart. Remember, the sun is about a million times bigger than the Earth. And bigger stars in it can be shredded by black holes. So it's absolutely crazy science. And it looked like a few of the flares coming out of giant black holes in these distant galaxies weren't as strong as they were supposed to be. And now it looks like the Tel Aviv group have proved that some stars swoop in, they sort of get their outer layers perhaps stripped off, but they don't fall into the black hole and get completely shredded. They manage to survive. In this case, the star orbits about every 700 days, roughly every 2 years. And one flare was seen in 2022, then one 2 years later. And the hope is now they might see a third flare in 2 years' time, 2026.
Yeah.
And that will show it actually survived three times. Or maybe the second time was when it went down the plug hole of the giant black hole.
So they're injured rather than, if you like, the stars are injured, if you want to put it down to just a normal day.
Severely wounded,
if you like. Now, the star AT2022 DBL orbits the black hole every 700 days. What does this repeated interaction tell us about the star's composition or the black hole's gravitational influence? And could other stars exhibit similar resilience?
Yeah, well, I mean, the composition of all stars is roughly that they're mostly made of hydrogen. About 3/4 of everything is hydrogen and 1/4 of helium. The rest are trace elements. And when the stars scream down the black hole, the friction of the gases from the star rubbing off each other. You try rubbing your hands together now. The faster you go, the hotter they'll get. You can actually burn yourself if you do it enough. But imagine doing that not just a few miles an hour humans can rub their hands together at, but close to a million miles an hour at the speed of light, and the temperature shoots up to be incandescent, brighter than a welding torch, and it gives out even ultraviolet light. The energy is such extreme that I told you that there are weird places. And so this hydrogen material, we can split up its light and tell what it's made of and how hot it is and how fast it's moving. And that's what researchers do. Now, so we think all stars will do the same thing. The question is, some stars are bigger than others. What will a big star look like compared to a small star like the Sun? And that's where the research is. There are computer simulations, as I said, and then proving that all the energy that comes out is, as the computer simulation suggests, is what you actually see, had a problem. Some of the flares weren't as big as they should have been.
Now,
it's a bit of complicated science, but that's basically what we now know. It looks like they can do it in several swoops around the black hole, not just one.
Now, the observed flares from those tidal disruption events have often been dimmer and cooler than models predicted. How does this discovery help explain those discrepancies, and what adjustments might theorists need to make to existing models?
Yeah, I think I've accidentally answered that question in the previous answer. But the idea that it's a multiple flare for one star would explain why the models didn't appear to be accurate. So no great problems with the model. It's like the science all works. It's just that it happens not in all cases, but in some cases, in several stages. The star goes in on several orbits, not just straight down the plug hole in one go.
And the study hints at unresolved questions about how supermassive black holes form and influence their galaxies. How might this discovery contribute to solving larger mysteries like the correlation between galaxy size and black hole mass?
Well, the whole field of black hole research is enormous. You know, they're very far away, they're very exotic, and computer simulations are the best way of doing them, and then trying to get actual observational evidence, it's like doing a detective story. One detective story I love is an Irish one that Dr. John McGorian from Queen's University in Belfast originally actually figured out that black holes control how stars form throughout their galaxy. And if it wasn't for a giant black hole 5 million times bigger than the Sun at the center of our galaxy, then you would actually have the stars forming too quickly and they wouldn't last long enough for life to start on the Earth. So in a way, we owe our very existence today to the giant black hole at the center of our galaxy, and it slows everything up. And it's brilliant that it was an Irishman that figured this out. It's called the McGorian effect after him. So Ireland, you know, punches well above its weight in terms of explaining the universe.
And I'm still trying to get Dr. Wiseman on the phone, but David, just moving to the moon, our own back to normal business on the astronomy slot. The moon is taking center stage this week. What makes it such a great target for stargazers?
Yeah, the moon is always a fantastic sight with the naked eye, and it'll be a crescent over the next few nights. You might see it around tonight, but it'll get higher up as the nights go by. The first quarter moon this week is on Friday. So if you're watching the moon, between now and then, you could see the dark side of the moon lit up, which is Earthshine. So the sun is shining onto the Earth. The Earth's a big blue marble in the moon's sky, and it gives so much light, it can actually light up the dark landscape of the moon. You see this lovely old moon in the young moon's arms, it's sometimes called, or Earthshine. That's something to look out for. And it's all visible with the naked eye, but if you've got a pair of binoculars, it looks even more impressive. And binoculars will start to show you the craters and mountains on the moon, hold them really steady. But even if you've got the tiniest of telescopes, because they're always on a stand to magnify a little bit more, you get incredible views of the craters and the mountains. So if you've got a telescope, this is the week to be viewing the moon. And, you know, keep that in mind. Be ready if any evening is clear. The sun is beginning to set a little bit earlier now, around the 9:30 mark, so you don't have to wait up too long. You can even see the moon in broad daylight as well. It does look better once the sun's set. So moon observing in the evening, that's the main priority this week.
Now, on Sunday, we've got a special pairing, the bright star Antares, near the moon. Tell us about that.
Yeah, Antares is the brightest star in Scorpius. So it's always low down in the south, and it's well placed this time of year. And the moon will line up with it, if you didn't know which star it was, on Sunday night. So as soon as it gets dark, look for the moon, and then you'll see Antares just next to it. If you get Astronomy On magazine, you'll see the diagram showing you exactly where to look. They're so close, if you put your fist up at arm's length, you'd cover both Antares and the moon at the same time. And while you're standing watching this with the naked eye, always better in binoculars, but easily visible with the naked eye, just think about Antares. It's a super giant star. It's so big, if we put it where the sun is, the Earth will be inside the star. And in fact, so would Mars. It's that big. And giant stars live their lives very quick and then explode. So in the next million years, we expect Antares will blow itself to bits in a supernova, leaving perhaps, linking into our first story, a black hole behind it.
Okay. Now, David, the planets have been kind of scarce in the evening, but Saturn's making a comeback, right?
Yeah. At last, one of the bright planets is coming back into the evening sky. I mean, technically, Saturn rises now at 11 o'clock by the end of this week, but you'll need to give it an hour to get high enough up for it to be impressive. So that's still midnight, technically the evening sky. You're looking for a reasonably bright star over in the east. The moon will be near it later in the month, if you don't know which one is which. And if you want to spot an evening planet, I'm afraid Saturn is the only one. But if you want to see it up close, there's a special reason to do it this year, and that is that the rings are tipped closest to edge on later this year. And we have our big annual barbecue, Starbecue, coming up. You've only got a few days to get tickets at the early bird rate. And Saturn will be the star attraction, because we won't see the rings this close to edge on in the telescopes we have there for another 15 years. So it's a very unique view of Saturn that's coming up on the 20th of September. But don't leave it that late to book your tickets.
Absolutely. And speaking of those tickets, just remind people of the early bird. Remind them of the date, because it's coming soon, as you said yourself.
Yep. Thursday night, your last chance. August 1st is Friday. And that's when the tickets have to go up. They'll go up in staged amounts. During August, they'll go up by about 10 euros, I think it is, for adults, 5 euros for children. And then in September, they'll unfortunately have to go up again, because we need to get the numbers in early to tell our caterers how many people to feed on the night. And if you go along on the night, 20th September, the tickets are double the price at 100 euros for adults. So do not leave it to the last minute. Get them at half price in the next few days. And bring the whole family. It's a big fundraiser for Astronomy Ireland. We do all the work. We point the telescopes. All you have to do is look through them. There'll be talks. There'll be exhibitions, trade stands, that professionally catered barbecue, one of the most powerful handheld lasers in Ireland, pointing out the stars in the sky. We'll even teach you how to use binoculars if you have them. And it all happens in the dark skies of the Wicklow Mountains, well away from streetlights, where you can see the Milky Way with the naked eye. So Roundwood Village, but go to astronomy.ie to get your tickets today. Get all your family and friends together. It's also a fundraiser for the society, and so you'll be supporting, promoting astronomy in Ireland as well as having a great time.
Yeah, and that, and usually in September as well, David, it's usually a good month weather-wise. It's usually a good month. So I'm not saying it's, you can't predict, but it's usually a good for skies in September, isn't it?
That's exactly why we do it. June and July would be terrible because it gets dark way too late and the night's not very long. But by the time you're into August or late August or early September, it's getting dark early enough. It's still warm enough to have a barbecue. So that was sort of the fun time. And we set the date based on when the moon is out of the sky, because we don't want the moon brightening up the sky. We might as well be in the city or a town if that were the case. So we pick a Saturday night when the moon's out of the way, late August, early September. It's the 20th of September this year, probably one of the latest we've ever held. But we've held them like that before. The barbecue will be fantastic. The views later in September, the earlier it gets darker. So in fact, the later ones are actually the best for the views. And by the way, people think, oh, what if it's cloudy? Don't worry. We solved how to figure to sort that out decades ago. We've been running this event. It's Ireland's biggest annual star party since 1992. And what we do is we assemble all the telescopes the following Friday or Saturday,
okay,
when it's clear. So you go along to the event on the 20th. And if you don't get clear skies, well, we'll repeat the telescopes the Friday or the Saturday until we get a clear sky. So we can guarantee people, okay, to look through the giant telescope.
Okay, and we'll have to leave it there. That's fantastic. Thanks, David, for that. Sorry about Dr. Phil Weisman. We will try and get him back at some point, because I would like to talk to him about that. Now, that was David Moore, editor of Astronomy Ireland. That brings us to the end of Stephen's programme.